Welcome to episode 321 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your raspy host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Hey, Josh, I'm here. My voice isn't, but I'm here.
You know, you and I talked the other night, and you don't sound your best, but you sound way better than you did on Monday.
Yeah, this is the post-South by Southwest head cold, I think.
Yep. Fortunately for you, we don't have a bunch of really long emails to read.
Oh, right. Wait, we do.
All right. Well, if you would like to send us some feedback like these fine listeners did, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can call and leave us a message at 877-856-4933, or like everybody else, email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. All right. First one is from John. He says, have you guys tried this utility for customizing Media Center? And he's talking about MCE Reset Toolbox. And he says, I'm running Windows 8.1 Pro with Media Center, and I find this tool to be a great way to customize the look and feel of how Media Center looks, as well as expose the ability to tweak settings that are otherwise hidden, like how many rows are displayed in the guide, as well as the size of the live TV buffer. But the best feature, especially for Windows 8.1, is the ability to add Metro apps as menu items that you can use to launch things like Xbox Music, video, or even Netflix. The steps are a little tedious, but the end result is pretty smooth. I also created a custom scene on my Logitech Harmony remote so it acts like a mouse to navigate around in the Metro app interface. If you're running Windows Media Center on 8.1, you should definitely check it out. I haven't messed around with this app in years. What about you, Richard?
Yeah, you know, I knew about this, but I have not played with it. And I actually think that this is one of the apps I was trying to think of a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about customization tools. I didn't realize that this had been updated to support anything in 8.1. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had no idea about these Windows 8.1 features. So I think I'm going to have to check this out. Although, I do have it installed. I was thinking that on my main computer here, the one that I used to podcast on, that when I had rebuilt it, that I didn't reinstall Media Center, but it looks like I did. So I guess I do have a Windows 8.1 Media Center box to play with this on. So I am going to check this out. I don't know that I have a lot of use for it. We don't do a lot of crazy stuff on our main Media Center, and any of these cool Windows 8.1 features wouldn't help me out on my main Media Center since it's Windows 7.
Well, the one thing that's nice is it does have the start menu editor, and that's something that I kind of miss since MCE Toolbox or whatever that thing was called. That's not it. It was MCE something.
That narrows it down.
Since that thing went away, MCE Studio? Menus Studio? I don't know what it was
called.
Something
like that.
I remember it just died. Like, it stopped working, and you had to, like, hack the executable if you wanted it to work. And So my customized menu hasn't changed, well, pretty much since I installed Media Center. So yeah. I need to change that.
All right. Our next email is from Alan. He says, I'm not sure if you guys track this stuff much anymore, but the old issues of the Windows Media Center guide are back in force. Guides haven't updated in over a week, and no one can seem to find anyone at Microsoft steering the wheels or even a customer service rep that knows how to file a report. We're all sitting, waiting to see where this one goes, and he linked to the thread over at the green button. Fortunately, it's resolved. Microsoft, as usual, waited until the last minute to fix this issue. For most people, their guide data ran through this weekend. For some people, it was Saturday. Some people, it was Sunday. When I checked again on my Media Center tonight, mine was also ending on Sunday. I went in, manually did the get latest guide listings from the settings section. And when it completed, now I've got guide data through April 7th. So they must have fixed it. You're probably just going to get the guide data as usual. You shouldn't notice any hiccups in there. But just in case, you know, if you're hearing this over the weekend and noticing that you've got less than a day or two of guide data, you might want to go into in Media Center, go to the start screen, go down to task, go to settings, go to guide, and then click the get latest guide listings option. And a few minutes later, you ought to have some guide data.
I'm loving it when we have two messages this week that have actually been resolved before we started talking about them. This is the first one. We'll talk about the second one later. All right. I will take the second message here. And the second message is from Carl. And this is pretty long, so we abbreviated this a little bit. But he says, "Hi, guys. I'm really enjoying the show. And here are a couple of items that I thought about while listening the past few weeks. First off, he asks about when we were talking about the VLC app for Windows RT, were we aware that Xbox Video will actually play MKVs? Because you remember, you were saying how MKV playback was problematic on it. And so he was wondering if we had even been aware of the fact that you could play those files potentially on Xbox Video. Now, I think we did talk about that in the past, but I don't know if we got into any great detail about it.
Oh, we got into great detail because I tried out a whole bunch of different files with different audio and video codecs, some with multiple audio streams. I detailed it pretty well what works and what doesn't.
That's right. I remember this now. Well, his experience is somewhat the same because he reports how he was able to play most of the files from his server on his Dell XPS 10 tablet running Windows RT 8.1, but there were compatibility issues. And he said, for example, it wouldn't play videos with a Dolby True HD track or with a track that was converted to FLAC, or if he had a file that had DTS in it. So essentially, that it'll play MKV files as long as the app itself would support the codecs, but it didn't support all codecs.
Right.
So, and I think that matches what you had found. Now, he says that you can switch between audio tracks, but on the other hand, it won't read built-in subtitles. So it's not ideal, but it may work for most folks. I hope that they improve this because it's really, quite frankly, kind of a half-hearted implementation of MKV support.
Yeah, and we know that with Windows 10, they're improving some of this stuff. Like we reported a few weeks ago that Windows 10 will natively support FLAC. I guess I don't know for sure if it's going to support FLAC 5.1. I honestly didn't even realize there was 5.1 for FLAC, but I guess that makes sense. So yeah, hopefully as Windows evolves into Windows 10, that this will get better, but we don't really know for sure.
All right, his second item. He says, in the latest episode, Chris mentioned that he couldn't take advantage of the HDMI CEC capabilities of the Chromecast because he uses an AV receiver. He can, depending on his receiver and TV. And so then he goes on and he says that you can plug your Chromecast directly into your AV receiver, which frankly is brilliant. And I know I've pondered that before, but I've never really tried that. And he says that he's set it up this way. It works great. And that he set his Harmony to send the appropriate TV or receiver commands when using the Chromecast. And the tricky part is just getting the home theater PC to be HDMI CEC compatible. And he doesn't know of any existing video cards or built-in video capabilities that have HDMI CEC implementations. But he uses something called the Pulse 8 CEC adapter to enable CEC. This is something that I'm not even aware of. Have you heard of this before?
Yeah, in fact, I figured if this didn't get brought up by Carl himself, that we have a listener in the chat, Sola Swede, who frequently has reminded us of this device in the past. It seems cheaper now than what I remembered it being also. It's only $45. And yeah, it's basically just a really small USB device that you plug into your computer and you also plug your HDMI into it. And it supposedly gives you CEC support from your Windows PC. But I've never tried it.
It just seems like magic to me. I don't understand. Anyway, he goes on to say that the idea of HDMI CEC is great and it works relatively well if compatible devices are used. But that said, the TV remote doesn't always have the functions you'd want to run. And he says the best solution is often a Harmony remote. And I obviously agree with that. And for more information about the Harmony remote line, check out the most recent episode of Home On. His third item is, he says, I'm a big fan of Media Browser, and I too think the name MBI is pretty good. After hearing you guys pronounce it, I think it might be because it sounds like the letter M and letter B, as in Media Browser. Not sure if that's what those guys were going for, but it works for me. Brilliant! I didn't even get that!
It actually is one of the things they were going for. I guess we didn't mention it last week, but in the release that we linked to, it did mention that that was one of their reasons for going with that name.
And that may almost subconsciously be one of the reasons why it doesn't sound stupid.
That could be.
All right. One more item from him. And he says, with the inevitable death of Media Center coming, I feel like we need some march music. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. I want to believe that Silicon Dust and Seton are thinking of DVR solutions for folks who'd like to use their cable car tuners and home theater PCs in the future. I've been using the original Seton PCIe 4 tuner along with the Silicon Dust HD Home Run Dual for about 3 years now, and I also have two extenders and an Xbox 360. I've started to investigate the TiVo Romeo and TiVo Mini as a potential replacement down the line, but I'd have to go with lifetime units, and I really don't want to pay those monthly fees. What do you guys think? Sorry for the long message, but I had some random thoughts to share. Keep up the good work, Carl. So obviously I'm a TiVo fan. I talk about TiVo a lot. I think it's a good solution. I think it's a very acceptable experience for people in a home. I don't think it's time yet. I mean, I've mentioned before that I intend to milk every bit of life that I can out of Media Center and that Microsoft is willing to allow us to, but I do think that the TiVo solution is a good transition path when it is time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think I'm downgrading my guess on whether or not Media Center is going to be around in the future with Windows 10, but like you, as long as I can continue to run Media Center on Windows 7 or Windows 8, and as long as that guide data keeps coming, I'm just going to keep using that, even if it's not on the latest OS. I honestly have no idea what I would do if Media Center and the guide data went away. I briefly discussed it with my wife a couple weeks ago, and I'm really not sure. You know, we would consider TiVo, but you know, as Carl mentioned, there's a pretty significant upfront cost to go that route. You know, we could potentially just go back to the crappy cable provider DVR, but we wouldn't really be all that happy about that either. So I don't know. And I'm just kind of sticking my head in the sand, hoping that I don't have to make that decision anytime soon.
Yep. Now, I am going to talk a little bit more about TiVo later in the show. So while I'm saying I'm not giving up my Media Center, I think there's hope in the future.
All right. Well, thank you, Carl, for that great email and a lot of good feedback there. We've got another big one from Peter, and this one we're also going to summarize because of its length. Basically, he wanted a way to keep from losing his recorded TV shows in the event of a hard drive failure. This happened to him before, and now he's been in search of a good solution for preventing that from happening. Now, you and I, we don't actually make backups of our recorded TV shows, Richard. And I know a lot of people don't just because of their size and because there's typically other ways to get them back if you were to lose them. But for some people, like Peter, they don't want to deal with that. They want to make sure that those files are always going to be there. So he was looking into various options. He said that we had mentioned RAID options in the past, doing a hardware RAID mirror. But he didn't really like that option because if you're doing a hardware RAID option using, say, the RAID controller on your motherboard or a separate RAID controller, if either of those pieces of hardware fail, then you have to replace them with the same thing or else you lose all the data on your hard drives. You can't get to it. So that's a pretty decent reason. So the next thing he looked into was just using the disk mirroring options that are built into Windows 7. You can do this right from the disk management tools in Windows. It's been there forever. But he found a limitation because he's got a couple of 4 terabyte drives, and those are formatted using GPT to enable those large sizes. And he found out that the mirroring option doesn't support drives using GPT in Windows 7. I don't know if that's the case in Windows 8, but he's using Windows 7 and that wasn't going to work. To use the mirroring, he says that you would have to use MBR, which limits the partition size to 2 terabytes, which kind of defeats the whole purpose. So he couldn't go that route either. Instead, what he ended up doing was using RoboCopy, a utility that a lot of people are pretty familiar with, that's great for copying folders of data. And he wrote a script that he runs, he's set it to run a couple times a day, and it looks at the recorded TV folder on OneDrive, looks for any changes, and copies all of those changes to the other drive. It's pretty simple. It even works while shows are recording. He says if it runs while a show is in the middle of recording, it'll copy that part of the file to the other drive, and then when it runs again later in the day, it'll grab the rest of the file and copy it over to the other drive. So he said nice. It's really resilient. It runs really fast. He said, obviously the first time it ran, it took a while because he had 1.9 terabytes of content. But now when it runs, it just runs for a few minutes at a time. And that's not bad at all. So if he were to have a hard drive fail in his computer, not really a problem. He'd have to tell Media Center to switch to look at the other drive. And when he put in a new drive, he might need to update his RoboCopy scripts and if the drive letter changed. But that's about it. So pretty slick little solution there. I'm going to email Peter and ask if he'd be willing to share that script with us in case anybody else is looking to do a similar setup with their Media Center.
Yeah, very nice. Just a quick point there, since I don't necessarily speak hard drive initialisms, I think MBR is master boot record. What is GPT?
I off the top of my head, I couldn't remember it either. I don't really get into this stuff all that much either. I just make it work. Windows okay. is typically smart enough to just do whatever it needs to do, and I don't really pay that much attention. And
that's fair.
I don't have any hard drives that are that big. The biggest hard drive I own is 1 terabyte. I haven't bought anything in a while, so.
All right. According to Wikipedia, it is the GUID partition table.
Indeed. All right. So he did say one other thing. This guy, Peter, wants a really resilient system, but he knows that sometimes, even with all of these backups in place, other hardware will fail, and you'll be down for maybe a couple of days while you replace hardware. So he was also looking for a backup solution if there's a total catastrophe, and what he ended up settling on was a Roku box, a Roku, and he's using Netflix on that, and he has a separate server that's running XBMC. So while he wouldn't have access to his live or recorded TV if the Media Center died, the rest of his family still has something that they can watch while he's working to repair the Media Center box. So great information from Peter. I love the dedication to making sure that all of his stuff is going to be there. He's not going to lose anything. And if he does lose something, that it's absolutely minimized, and the effect on the rest of his family is minimized too. So great work, Peter. It's nice to see that level of dedication from the community.
I hope he's doing like the same amount of diligence for his photographs, his home videos, his finances.
You have to imagine a guy like this is.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, one more thing, and that's a quick mention of a post that was in the Google Plus Media Center community that we moderate. And this is a post from Robert, and he says, I've been using Media Center for years until today. This was about a week ago. He says, my Media Center lost connection with all of my extenders. They're all in the same wired Cat 6 network. All of them have internet access, but they do not connect. Any ideas? I'm using Windows 7 Media Center with 5 Xbox 360s as extenders. Now, he talked about how he verified that the devices were all functioning properly on the network, that they were able to get network connectivity, that he was able to ping them from his Media Center, stuff like that. I asked him if he had installed anything, like any drivers or anything like that, and he said that he hadn't. This didn't seem to correspond with Patch Tuesday, so that was kind of weird. And I originally intended on bringing this up here to see if any of our listeners had any ideas, or maybe, Josh, if you had any ideas. Well, he fixed it, and he fixed it by restoring his PC back to February, which suggests that it's definitely a software or driver problem, but what?
Yeah, that's the problem with this. You know, you're typically under pressure to get it fixed. And this does technically fix it, but it doesn't give you any information as to what actually went wrong. So I don't know. I'm not, you know, you and many other people suggested things to try, and he tried replacing his network switch and all sorts of things, and none of it worked. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. But yeah. I guess I'm just glad that he's got it working again.
Me too. Me too. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it for our feedback. It's been so long since we started the feedback. Why don't you re-mention how people can leave us feedback?
All right. Well, as I scroll all the way past back up to the top of our show notes, past all this feedback, the two main ways are email, which is what most people do, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. But if you want to be different, if you want to stand out from the crowd, you could call us with your phone at 877-856-4933. And don't worry, we don't answer that number. It's just a message box. So leave us some voicemail at that number and we'll just play it on the show. We won't even have to read it for when Richard's voice hurts from being sick.
All right. Well, let's dive into our discussion topics tonight. And we're going to start off with some video news. The first thing I want to talk about is one of my favorite add-ins to Media Center, My Movies. And there is a new pre-release available for version 5.13 of My Movies. So why is this important? Well, this pre-release adds two things. If you're tolerant of beta releases, one of the things that I've noticed is that if you're not doing crazy stuff, the My Movies pre-releases are usually pretty stable. So it's a good opportunity to test stuff out in advance. The first thing that it adds is the ability to provide personal data for TV series. So on movies, in My Movies, one of the things that you can do is you can add information like where you have it stored and like your personal ratings and stuff like that, stuff that you might associate with a movie. And now he's extended that to also be supported for TV series. And the other thing that it does, and this one had me scratching my head a little bit, is that when the service runs for My Movies, it will also launch iTunes if you wanted to as an option. And I thought, well, okay, but why would I want that? Like, why is that good? So I reached out to Brian, and within 20 minutes, he got back to me with an answer to my question. And this is really ingenious. The idea here is that by launching iTunes, your My Movies library, if you're converting your movies to a supported video format, can also support your Apple TV with the local media by making it available in the iTunes library. So you're taking your movies that you have, you're loading them into My Movies. One of the steps that you can do when you do that is convert to some playable format. One of the formats it can convert to is an Apple TV compatible M4V file. And if that gets loaded into your iTunes library, then your Apple TV can see that and make your entire My Movies library available for playback through Apple TV. And it also will now support the appropriate metadata for Apple TV. So pretty clever integration there.
Yeah, that sounds really great for someone like you who's rocking Media Center and an Apple TV and other Apple devices. So that's cool. You know, the only thing that I don't like about My Movies is that, you know, you talk about the crazy numbering system for Lumia phones. I can never keep these version numbers and betas and pre-releases and all that stuff straight with My Movies.
Well, the reason for that is because he's constantly doing updates, and that's a great thing.
Yep, it's a good problem to have.
As opposed to just throwing more and more devices out there with confusing numbers.
Or perhaps throwing away services that might be offered, like Amazon's Unbox.
Ooh, good transition. So we talked about this a little while ago, and the short of it is that Amazon Unbox was an old service, an old application that you could use for Amazon Video that you had purchased. You could download the video or you could stream it to your desktop. It's a desktop app. Now, because it gave you the ability to download the video, it also meant that Media Center could then play back the video that it had downloaded because it was essentially in a protected format that was Windows compatible. Well, the Amazon Unbox app is going to go away and the services behind it are going to stop functioning at the end of this week on March 29th. So you have a short window of time left if you want to get playable versions of those media files down on your computer that'll work after the Unbox service goes away. So the way that you do that is you go into the app, you upgrade it, and it'll have a new feature that'll give you a one-time download in a file format that'll be played locally, and then you'll have access to those. Now, the question that I still don't have an answer to is, are these going to be locked to that particular computer? If you end up reformatting, or if you want to move to a different home theater PC, are you screwed? And we just don't know the answer. I haven't done this myself, so I'm going to need to do this in the next couple of days, actually, because we're all running out of time.
Yeah, you got to take your own advice, copy some files down, and then try to play them on another machine.
Yeah.
And I don't have high hopes of that working.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to be trying tonight.
All right. Well, sticking with the video news, we got some interesting news from the NFL this week, and that is that the NFL themselves have decided to remove their restrictive blackout policy. Now, if this sounds familiar, that's because last September, the FCC got rid of their blackout rules that they had put into place. So the way this works is the NFL said, we are going to black out our games from local networks if the football game is not sold out in terms of ticket sales at least 72 hours prior to the game. And then the FCC put in regulations for any cable providers that they would have to follow by the same rules. Now, that didn't really matter that much because the vast majority of NFL football games are on CBS and Fox, and a couple on NBC. So that didn't really matter, but the FCC was trying to say, you know, the NFL, you need to change this policy because it doesn't make sense anymore. And
but wasn't this even true if you had some sort of limited access service? Like if you had NFL ticket, if it was in your area, weren't you still prevented from watching it?
You know, I don't think the NFL Sunday ticket thing, I don't think that situation applies here. You are blacked out from seeing your local market's games on NFL ticket. I assume that's still true. I guess I don't know for sure, but I I was thinking that might have been for different reasons, but maybe it's not. Maybe when the FCC put this into play, maybe that changed how all of these sports packages work. But because those things have always been for basically for out of market games. You know, if you live in LA and you want to watch the Jets, you know, the New York Jets, then you could get NFL Sunday ticket and watch every Jets game. But if you were in Detroit and you wanted to watch the Lions, then don't get NFL Sunday ticket because you wouldn't be able to via NFL Sunday ticket. So I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm not sure if that changed. But on the TV side, this week, the NFL themselves voted, and by that I really mean the owners of the teams voted, to strike down their own blackout rules. So this year, for the first time in forever, those rules just won't be in effect. If your local team doesn't sell out, your game will still be available on TV. So that's great. But the other thing to note here is that when this happens, it really stinks, but it really doesn't happen very often. Last season, it happened a grand total of zero times. And in 2013, it only happened two times. And that's two times for every single game. You know, that's 32 teams times 15 games, you know, over 16 weeks. And only two were blacked out. So it's not like it's been that big of an issue. And the point that everyone's been making here is this isn't causing people to not buy tickets. Like, people are still going to the games even with these silly rules. So just get rid of the rules for, and really this helps markets with terrible teams that can't sell out, but even the terrible teams typically sell out, so it doesn't matter. So either way, I mean, it's good news. It's obviously good news. They've only agreed to get rid of this of these blackout restrictions for this year, but hopefully ticket sales will still do fine this year, and they will just decide to permanently get rid of this.
And if not, they'll just turn the greed back on.
Exactly. The other interesting thing that the NFL announced this week is that for kind of for the first time ever, the NFL has decided that they, and by they I mean the NFL, will be broadcasting a game online. And the thing that's different about this, because NBC has broadcast some games online, I think CBS has done the same, but the thing that's different is that this game, which is the Buffalo Bills versus Jacksonville Jaguars game, which is being played in London during week 7 of the NFL, the NFL holds exclusive rights to this game. They're still going to air it in the local markets of Jacksonville and Buffalo, but none of the TV providers actually have rights to this game. So that's kind of the different thing here. And the NFL is going to play this online. Where? We don't know yet. They haven't announced that. You know, it could be on YouTube. It could be on Xbox video. Who knows? But this game will be available nationwide online.
Good stuff.
Yep.
I don't get to say that very often with the NFL.
No, that is for sure.
Partly because I don't care, and partly because they're just, as I mentioned before, so chock full of greed.
Yep. All right, so one more video story, and that is, if you're an Xbox One owner, you've got a new app to check out, and that is a new app from Epix, the premium movie channel. And of course, this means, like we're used to hearing, that you only get access to this if you get Epix through your cable or satellite provider. So there's still that login wall. You're going to need to pay for this on your TV provider to get it. If you're a cable cutter, you're not going to be able to get this. Sorry. But if you get Epix on TV, now you can get it on your Xbox One. So that's always nice for people who've got an Xbox One, maybe in a room that doesn't have a cable box. All right, so let's move on to some audio news of the week. And by far, the biggest story this week was Microsoft's announcement of OneDrive integration for Xbox Music.
Now, we knew this was coming, right? This is just, it's happening now.
Yeah, I think we knew this was coming. It had been rumored that it had been coming for a long time, like a year, I think. I don't know that we knew for sure that it was coming, but Microsoft just dropped this on everything all at once, like no real pre-announcement, just bam, here it is. And so what it is in your OneDrive account, you now have a folder called Music. You upload any music you want up there. Doesn't matter where you got it. Doesn't matter if you bought it from Xbox Music or Amazon or, you know, iTunes, whatever. Throw it up on OneDrive in the Music folder. It has to be in the Music folder. And then open up the Xbox Music app on anything. A Windows phone, Windows 8 device, Xbox One, Xbox 360, or just browse over to music.xbox.com and your music is there and visible and ready to be streamed. It'll play on anything. It doesn't require you to have an Xbox Music Pass. Let me say that one more time. It does not require an Xbox Music Pass, which is great. So you can finally access all of your music again on any of these devices. You can stream it. You can download it if the app on that particular platform supports it, like on Windows Phone. But if you do have an Xbox Music Pass, they did throw in something extra for you, and that is you'll get an additional 100 gigs of storage on your OneDrive account for free. Now, you have to put "for free" in quotes because it requires that Xbox One subscription. Or sorry, not Xbox One, Xbox Music subscription. But this is great, and it works really well. You know, I've used this on my Xbox One. I've used this on my Windows phones. I've used this on my Windows 8 devices, and it works really well. It's totally seamless. You know, you just browse your collection. You know, I had just got an album, and I tossed it up on OneDrive. It's the only place where I have this album, and it's just available everywhere. And I was able to download it to my phone for offline playback. I was listening to it on my Xbox One earlier. It just works. I love this feature. It's really nice to have.
Yeah, this is a great feature. And I think it kind of brings them more in line with what a lot of the other cloud music providers are doing now. As with those providers, a word of caution that this should not be your primary storage for these digital files, because it will go away if you don't end up, you know, continuing to, let's say you have the unlimited storage because you have Xbox or Office 360 and you get rid of that, or you stop your Music Pass. I mean, there are things that could shrink the size of your available storage, and in all likelihood, you'd get warnings, but you just need to be aware of the fact that this isn't permanent.
Yeah, that's a really good thing to point out. You know, the other thing that's really nice about this, you know, for a lot of people, they might be thinking, you know, big deal. We had a solution like this before with Windows 8.0 that they then took away from us. They had that whole matching tool where you'd set up one computer with your music library and it would sync what you have, you know, not the actual files. It would just keep track of what files you had and then make it so that you could stream those files on any of these other devices. That eventually all went away, but it had one big downside. And I know this affected you, Richard, and that was it would only work for content that Microsoft had a license to. So
right.
If it was Led Zeppelin or the Beatles or, you know, things or just something obscure, then it wouldn't show up on those other devices. Whereas this, it just shows up. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just there because it's your music and it's streaming your music from the cloud. So very, very nice solution. Like you said, it's pretty similar to some of the other offerings from the competitors, but it's really well done in this case.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice.
And there was one more new app available this week, and that is radio.com. This is an app from the CBS radio properties, now available on Windows Phone and Windows 8. It gives you access to over 300 CBS radio stations from around the country. The app works pretty well. I didn't think it was perfect, and oddly, I had more issues with it on Windows 8 than I did on Windows Phone. But for these types of apps where they're streaming like real regular radio, you know, it's not like some internet thing. It is internet streaming of regular FM and AM radio stations. I find that I have a use for these more when I'm on the go. Like if I'm in the car and want to listen to a football game and I'm traveling, you know, like if I'm going to Indianapolis for the weekend and want to hear the Lions game on the way back, I've got to stream it through the internet because I'm not going to get it on a local radio station. So that's where I tend to use these types of apps. And this one's pretty good. And, you know, CBS radio properties are, you know, they're all over the place. They're in most of the big cities around the country. So hopefully the stations that you're looking for will be available in this app. And hey, it's free, so it's at least worth checking out.
And here's a random tidbit of information, but I don't know if you've ever thought of this, Josh. Radio.com just is one of the many brilliant domain names that CBS holds. CBS holds radio.com. They hold TV.com. They hold MP3.com.
Wow.
They hold news.com.
Jeez.
And they hold downloads.com. I'm sure there are more.
Wow. That is impressive.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will keep us rolling here because the next story is from our gaming section. So this is where Richard gets to continue to rest his voice. Xbox One April system update for preview users. Again, preview users, this is the confusing part where we have to distinguish between whether this is an update for everybody or only people who are in the preview program. If you're in the preview program, you've got a new update and it brings with it some party chat improvements, although most of that is just around troubleshooting. You know, if you're trying to use your Kinect, but your Kinect is disabled, it'll tell you that, you know, things like that. It also gives you easier access to game hubs, so you can access game hubs directly from the activity feed. You know, if you see that one of your friends got an achievement, now you can quickly access the game hub right there from your activity feed. They've also updated, this is actually the one I'm the most excited about. They've updated the way achievement notifications work. Previously, if you got an achievement while you're playing a game, it would pop up and say that you got one, and it would give you the title of the achievement, but they typically try to give these funny names, and you probably don't actually know what that achievement meant.
Like what it was for.
Exactly. So then you've got to hop out and go to the achievements app and actually look at the description. Well, they've finally made this logical and they're displaying the description in the notification now.
Nice.
Yeah. So that is really nice. The other thing that's unusual about this particular preview update is apparently there's going to be another one. So this is the first April preview update. And then there's another one coming soon, although we don't know when. And it's going to have more features. So I don't know how this is going to be actually rolled out for non-preview users. Will they just get all of these updates as one April update, or will they also get them as two separate updates? I'm not really sure. I think for most people, they would rather have less updates so that they don't have to deal with the Xbox rebooting and all that stuff. So
yeah, I'd assume this would come as one when it actually rolls out to everyone.
I don't know. I would actually assume the other way with them rolling the preview out individually. I'm betting that they'll release the full version the same way because they'll give us this preview, give us a couple weeks to test it, then push it out to the masses. And at some point during that time, roll out a second preview update. And then after a couple of weeks, roll that one out to the masses. So I don't know. I guess it could go either way. It's probably 50-50, but at the end of the day, I suppose it doesn't really matter that much. In other Microsoft news this week, this is really more up my alley too. We've obviously had some beta builds of Windows 10. And we've known that Windows 10 supports a new updated universal app platform, but we didn't really know many details behind how apps and app development is changing in Windows 10. I didn't expect that we would find anything out until the Build conference, which is at the end of April, so about a month away. But Microsoft kind of shocked everybody, well, at least me.
Yeah, I didn't expect
this. Yeah, and this week released Windows 10 developer tools, so an updated version of a Visual Studio and the Windows 10 SDK. So I haven't actually gotten to play with this yet. It's been kind of an insane couple of weeks for me, but there's some new stuff out there. If you're a developer and you've been interested in developing Windows apps, you can now go out and grab all of this stuff. You've got to be a Windows insider. You've got to have Windows 10 installed for this stuff to work, which is probably fairly obvious, but just in case it wasn't, make sure you've got Windows 10 on something before you try to install this stuff, and then give it a look.
So I downloaded and installed this, and from what I can tell, I'm just kidding. That was Xcode I installed.
You're fired. Boo, hiss.
All right. Well, there's other stuff going on in the industry that I think is pretty relevant. And one of the things that I wanted to mention was that there was some news this week that HP is now going to be partnering with Bang & Olufsen to be doing their special audio edition laptops and computers. You may remember that HP had the Beats partnership before, which had varying degrees of success and reviews. But I'd be really curious to see what they end up pulling off with Bang & Olufsen, because B&O doesn't put their name on just anything.
Yeah, I mean this should be cool. You know, I've never given that much stock to this sort of partnership, because I don't care how good this stuff is. Laptop speakers never really sound that great because they're still going to be small little speakers, and they can only sound so good. I mean, I've got a $2,500 MacBook Pro now, and even the speakers in that aren't worth listening to music on.
Yeah, I get that. I think that these audio partnerships are really intended to try to improve that so that you can listen, particularly for those people, let's say, who use their laptop to watch television programming. So, you know, I think that it's becoming more important. And the fact that B&O is getting involved in something like this, I don't know. I think this is really interesting and probably more interesting to me. And I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but man, it just seems like HP is doing everything right in their PC division these days.
Really? Maybe I'm just really tired, but I'm having a hard time thinking of anything else that is jumping out at me as a great decision by HP of late.
Well, from what I can tell, I think the HP, I believe it's the HP Envy, has been getting pretty good reviews. That's the very thin laptop they have.
Oh, yep. I forgot about that machine. But yeah, that does look nice.
Also, the HP Stream devices are really good economical tablets.
Yep. I don't know why I completely forgot about those, but you're right there.
So, I mean, it really seems like they've turned that division around a lot, because you may remember that that was one of the things that they were thinking of just shedding completely.
Right. Because most of their laptops weren't very good.
And there's not a lot of money there. So, right. You know, in hardware, they're really making money on ink cartridges.
Right. Boy, that's for sure.
All right. Well, the other industry story that I wanted to cover was, I think, really interesting. So we talk about Plex on this show a lot because people are interested in finding out more about what alternatives exist for watching movies and what solutions are out there for their home theater PCs, particularly in light of, as we've said in the past and earlier in the show, the unknown future of Media Center going forward. And I also talk about TiVo a lot because I'm a TiVo owner and it's one of Media Center's main competitors. Well, our friends over at That's Not Funny have posted a story. Now, the headline that Dave has says, "Confirmed." I don't know if I would put it that way, but he has a story showing that Plex is likely coming to the TiVo. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, that really does. For like that story we talked about earlier, for the people who are thinking, you know, I want to move away from Media Center, but Media Center gives me access to more than just my TV content. It gives me a way to access my music and my movies and stuff. Now TiVo would have that option with Plex.
Yeah. Yeah. Now he's basically citing a local provider's TiVo ad talking about the new services that are coming to that provider's box. And it includes things like iHeartRadio, which we've known about, and Vudu. But one of the items listed there was Plex for video and music streaming. And wow, I think this is phenomenal. If this is true, I tweeted about this, and I mean this very seriously. I tweeted in all caps, each word, its own sentence, with a period. This changes everything. I really think this makes this box much more viable for a much larger audience.
Yeah, it really pushes this box past the... It sounds kind of weird to say this, but past the more casual mainstream audience that the TiVo has done a fairly good job of attracting. Now, it's not totally mainstream because most people still just use their cable provider's box, but TiVo has sat rather well in this comfortable niche between people who just take their cable box and us crazy tinkerers who are building PCs to stick in our living rooms.
Right.
Because those other two options just didn't provide everything that we need. And yeah, bringing Plex, you know, I can't think of a better partner for them to bring on board than Plex. It is the software that everyone is talking about in this space all the time, which is why we're talking about it all the time.
I agree. Well, I can think of one or two other partners they should bring on, like HBO Go and Showtime Anytime, but these are great additions, and I hope we see this soon. I think this is fantastic. I'm definitely going to be keeping a watch on this, and it may actually get me to try Plex.
That's what I was just thinking, is you'll finally have enough of a reason to install a Plex server somewhere in your house.
Yeah. Yeah. So good stuff.
Very cool. All right.
Well, speaking of installing things in the house and what's going on in our homes, we like to talk about what's going on in our entertainment centers. And in my entertainment center, well, my entertainment center was a little neglected because I went away. I went to South by Southwest. So I took my new headphones that I had bought, my Bang & Olufsen headphones, and it was mentioned in the chat tonight that I hadn't previously discussed what headphones I bought. So clarification there, the Bang & Olufsen headphones I bought are the H8s, and it's a Bluetooth and wired combination. So I can use it on a plane with a wire, or I can use it connected to the computer like I'm using tonight, using them as a kind of a studio headset. And I like them. I like them a lot. One thing that I don't like, and this is kind of weird, but if you're connected with a wire, the controls on the side don't actually control anything. That only works through Bluetooth.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. Kind of.
No, I disagree.
Well, I think the only devices that reliably work with wired little control thingies are iPhones. I don't know anything else that does.
All right. Well, I have an iPhone and that didn't work with it either. So I don't know. Whatever. All right. So meanwhile, while I'm away, everything breaks. Because that's what happens, right?
Absolutely.
You go away and everything stops working. So my media center was giving audio codec errors. And, you know, when that happens, that just means video won't play. Just stops playing. You know, so, okay, movie servers down and out. Great. All right, well, we'll watch TiVo for live TV. That's good. And TiVo for streaming. Not good. For whatever reason, and I don't know what's going on with this, I haven't had time to troubleshoot it yet, but all my streaming services, which are over Mocha, but I've never had any problems with them before, are stuttering like crazy. And I don't mean stuttering like... I mean stuttering like they stop as if they're buffering, and it may stop for 30 seconds, and sometimes it may not even restart. It's just frozen until you back out and start again. Crazy. I don't know what's going on there, because I have no problems with those same services on other devices, and I have no problems just doing other stuff over the network on that box. So I need to troubleshoot that and figure out what's going on there.
I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. You're not having Skype problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, okay, fine. So Apple TV figures he'll just watch the Apple TV. Goes to the Apple TV. It's bricked. There's an Apple on the screen. Nothing else. Won't do anything. Unplug it. Plug it back in. Same thing. 3 or 4 times. Bricked. I had to do a hard reset on the thing to get it back to a usable state. Like I had to plug a USB cable into it and plug it into my computer to be able to reset it.
Wow.
What happened? What karma is out there that when I leave home, then everything's going to break. So I'm going to get all this grief. Why is that?
I don't know, Richard. You've made somebody angry.
Well, I know who I've made angry, and that's at home.
Right.
So, all right. So anyway, I get home and we start catching up on some TV. So something I started, something I continued, and something I stopped. I started a new show because, you know, I think I say that every week, right?
Yeah, because that's what you need is more TV shows.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, I need new stuff that we're both going to enjoy watching. And I knew I found something, and man, they were promoting the heck out of this at South by Southwest because Showtime was one of the big sponsors of the South by Southwest Film Festival. So Penny Dreadful, have you ever heard of it?
Nope, but now I know why, because it's a Showtime show.
It's a Showtime show. It is kind of like eerie mythology, like Frankenstein and vampires and werewolves and all that sort of stuff, all mixed in together into this interestingly new interwoven story in Victorian times. And it's really good. It's also, I'm surprised, not on Skinemax, because I swear there's sex in every episode. But it's a really, really good show. And so I'm halfway through the first season and already can't wait for the second season, which is why they were promoting it so heavily at South by Southwest, which starts later this spring. The thing that I'm continuing is Broadchurch. And Broadchurch Series 2 has started, and we've started watching that, and it is good. They've done a really good job of picking up, adding new storylines, continuing the old, keeping it as confusing as ever, and I am really enjoying it. And I see how much better this is than the US version. I really, really like what they're doing with it. And then something that's ended is Glee, and I'm glad it needed to end. There were one or two really good episodes this season, and the rest of it was just so trite. Even in the closing two episodes they had, one of them was just such an easy cheat as a look back of how it all got started, where they film pretending that all this had happened 6 years ago, even though you had never seen it. And they had to do something clever without being disrespectful to bring back one of the actors who had since died. And they did a fairly good job doing that, but it was just, I'm glad it's over. It's a shame. It used to be a great show. Now there's new stuff coming on, and I'm pretty excited about it. I don't know about you, Josh, but Orphan Black Series 3 starts in, 3 weeks?
I don't know. I'd forgotten that starts up again in the spring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I am very excited about that. And this week, it's been all over Twitter, X-Files. 6 episodes of a limited series of X-Files, I think, slated for next year. I am so excited.
Yep. Featuring the original actors, David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, both going to be on it. Yeah, this looks cool. Hopefully it's good. You know, I haven't watched an episode of the X-Files in well over 10 years. And I don't know if that's one of those shows that, that still holds up. If it isn't, hopefully this miniseries will. I don't know. But I'll definitely give it a try. It's only 6 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. So what are you doing in your home?
Not nearly as much because my life has been out of control crazy. But I did manage to finish one thing, and that was season 1 of The Newsroom. Man, that show just keeps getting better. It is so good. I finished season 1, and I immediately walked into the living room and said, Jen, you have to watch this. You have to. So now I need to move on to seasons 2 and 3. Ah, it's so good. I was thinking of waiting to see if HBO Now would be available to people who don't have Apple TVs and stuff like that. But now I'm not so sure if I can wait that long.
Oh, geez.
And may need to get it on disc. I don't know. It's so good. It's so good. Speaking of streaming services like HBO Now, I also tried, emphasis on the try there, to set up Sling TV on my Xbox One. And I for 2 reasons, wanted to do it on the Xbox One. One, because it's the Xbox One and that just makes the most sense. And 2, if you set it up through the Xbox One, your trial is good for a month instead of 7 days. So that would just give me more time to try it out. Unfortunately, it never worked and I gave up. I tried, I believe it was either the day the app launched or maybe the second day after it had launched. And I went through the whole process using Smart Glass because, you know, you have to put in an email address. Mine is really long, plus your passwords, plus all of your credit card information, all of this stuff through your Xbox, which, as you can imagine, if you're trying to use a controller, miserable experience. Make sure you've got your phone or something with the Smart Glass app so that you can do all that typing on your mobile device's keyboard. But at the end, it just didn't work. It gave me an error. When I launch it, it gives me an error saying something about the media player or something like that couldn't register or something stupid. And it just doesn't work. So I've tried re-going through the registration process. That fails now. I think because I'm halfway into the process, I was able to log into sort of Sling TV on my PC, but it wants me to finish the registration process there, in which case I would only get the 7-day trial. And I just said, forget it. I don't care that much. I'm not actually going to switch to Sling TV right now. If they can't fix their app, fine. But I did talk to some people on Twitter over the weekend, and it is working for some people. Now, I don't know if these people were already Sling TV subscribers and maybe they didn't have to go through the miserable registration experience on the Xbox One itself. But the app is working now if you're willing to sign up for it. So that's cool. But my most exciting thing was that this week I got, after purchasing on eBay, a gigantic and very bright yellow Lumia 1520 to replace the tiny, by comparison, Lumia 1020 that I've now sold, sort of sold on eBay, if the guy ever pays for the auction. And I gotta say, I am loving this 1520. It is, you know, it's a lot faster. Obviously, the screen is gigantic.
I can't see you behind that screen, Josh. Hold on.
Yeah, it is ridiculously huge. And, you know, for the first time ever, I might get a case for this phone, which I don't want to do because that kind
of
defeats... It's
going to make it bigger.
It defeats the purpose of paying extra to get a yellow one, if you can't really see it because of the case. But it's so big that it seems like it would be really easy to drop. And it seems like everyone I know who's had a 1520 has dropped it and broken the screen.
Oh,
no. I really don't want to do that. So for the first time ever, I might get a case for my phone. I'm just not happy about it.
Huh. Well, I guess, are you a phone in pocket person you are, aren't you?
Yes.
So how does this work if you're wearing jeans? Now, I'm assuming you're not wearing skinny jeans because that's tacky.
Yeah, exactly. No, no skinny jeans here. I've only tried it in a couple pairs of jeans so far, and it's fit fine in those. Although, like, if you've got it in your pocket and you're sitting down, like in the car, it's pretty hard to get it out of the pocket while you're seated. There's one more pair of jeans that I need to try that I really don't think it's going to fit in at all. And that might just mean that I need to not wear those jeans anymore because my phone is always with me. And I'm sad because they're my favorite pair of jeans. But if I can't carry my phone in them, they're not going to work. And the phone is way more expensive than a pair of jeans.
Okay, good point. I just think it's funny that you need to tailor your wardrobe to your phone choice.
I'm not sure that I would call it tailoring my wardrobe, but just chucking one item of clothing from my closet.
All right. Well, that is it. But before we go, we each have a quick announcement. So mine is much less virtuous than Josh's, but...
you've been cheating on me.
I wanted to let people know that I appeared on an episode of the Ritual Misery podcast. This is a show that a friend of mine does, he and a military buddy of his. And it's basically a, you know, sit around and shoot the crap for an hour kind of show. It is entirely not safe for work. It is likely to offend most people that listen, but it's also of great interest to me because these guys, you know, one of them is someone that I know, another is someone that he's known for his entire life, and they're both geeks, and they basically talk about the geeky stuff and technology in their life, and they talk a lot about military life, so I think it's of particular interest to anyone that is in the military or has a military background. If you're interested, it is episode 27 of the Ritual Misery podcast. Can be found on iTunes or pretty much anywhere else. Again, not safe for work.
All right, cool. I'll have to check that one out. I'd never heard of that one. So I will subscribe right after this show. All right, so mine is completely different. I've mentioned a few times in the past that my wife and I are in the process of adopting a child from China, which, by the way, that process is flying by. We've made lots of progress over the last few months, and largely thanks to my wife. She's been amazing. And you may follow our blog. We've got a blog about it called GreatWallToGreatLakes.com. And if you follow that, then you would see all the crazy news that we've had going on with that. But we've also got a new thing that we're doing this week. This adoption thing, it's really, really expensive. So we've done a couple of fundraisers and we're starting a new one this week. This one's kind of shocking a lot of people, the people that know me well. We're doing a raffle. We wanted to do a raffle of some sort of technology, which makes sense coming from us. But I wanted to make it something that would be interesting to everybody. So we're not giving away a Windows phone.
What?
We're not giving away a Surface or
what?
Or even an Xbox. Instead, we're raffling off an Apple iPad Mini 2.
Awesome tablet.
It is a great little tablet. If you're looking for an iPad Mini, I think this is the one to get because it's way better than the original iPad Mini. And it's not, you know, the iPad Mini 3 is newer, but it doesn't really have, the only thing different about that one is the little Touch ID. So raffling off an iPad Mini 2 to help us bring our daughter home. And it's really simple. You go to our blog, click on a link, and you donate some money, and you get entries into our raffle, and it's all tax deductible, which is really cool.
How is that? I don't understand.
So the site that we're doing this through, called Pure Charity, it's kind of like Kickstarter for charities. It's weird. And it works because the money is going not directly to us, it's going straight to the adoption agency. which is a which is a nonprofit. So that's how this all works.
Very smart.
Yeah. So it's tax deductible for you, and it's not income for us, so we don't have to pay taxes either. It's win-win for everybody. And hey, you might even get an iPad mini out of this. So the way it works is if you donate $10, you get one entry in. If you donate $50, you'll get 6 entries into the contest. And if you donate $100, you'll get 15 entries in. So obviously your chances increase with the more that you would be willing to donate. And that's pretty much it for all the details. If you want to help out, again, link in the show notes for that. And the drawing for that will be on tax day, April 15th. So we'd appreciate it if anybody wants to help out.
So you could get some good news on tax day.
Yeah, exactly. You might win something on tax day to cover all the money that you owe the IRS. Maybe you'll need to sell this to pay your tax bill. I'm not sure. Hopefully not. Hopefully you can just enjoy it. All right. Well, that's it for this week's show. If you want to get a hold of us, there's about a zillion different ways you can do that. If you like the as close to real time as possible way, you can follow us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And to keep up with the latest news from the site, you can follow at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. There's that Google Plus Windows Media Center community that we mentioned earlier. Just do a search for it. You can call our voicemail line at 877-856-4933 or email entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can also check out some of our other podcasts, like The End User from Chris and Taylor, covering the latest tech news from the end user's perspective, and Richard's other show, Home On, covering the latest home automation and control news. So, Richard, what's the latest with Home On?
Latest episode was the interview that we had with Chad Thompson from Logitech, the marketing and product director of the Harmony product line. And man, we had a great discussion. It was weeks ago that we recorded this, but I think it's so relevant, and I'm so excited to have been able to bring some clarity to this and some information to people who are curious about how Logitech is getting into the home automation space. And I think we break some release date news in this show. So good stuff.
Yeah. And frankly, a lot of crossover for this audience. I mean, we talk about Logitech Harmony remotes all the time, and I learned a lot listening to this episode. So definitely a great one. Very cool. All right. And if you're listening to any of these podcasts or you're not subscribed to them, you can find them on iTunes or Zune. We're also on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And if you enjoy any of our shows, then we'd appreciate it if you would give us a rating or a review to help other people find our shows. And then come back and listen live. If you're not doing that already, we record this show typically on Tuesday nights around 8 p.m. Eastern. And we've got a chat room. You can listen to us as we record this and talk with us while we're recording it. So it's a lot of fun, and we love having everybody who shows up. So follow us on Twitter to find out for sure when we're going live every week, because sometimes we move it by a day or an hour here and there. But that's how you'll find out when we're live. But that's going to do it for episode 321. I'm Josh Pollard, he's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next week for episode 322. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.